Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies. Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you are listening to Maltin on Movies. And we have today, doing her very first podcast, a woman who has starred in everything from The Immortal Airplane to the recently celebrated and justly celebrated Marriage Story. And that is Julie Haggerty. Welcome, Julie.
Well, I'm just thrilled to be here, and it's an honor.
You're
so
great.
It's an honor to be here.
Well, you're easily impressed.
You're right. I will tell you this one. So you spoke to Julie at the Spirit Awards, at the Independent Spirit Awards.
Yes.
And I always work the show. I got to work it every year.
Oh.
And at the end of it, my dad and I will sort of meet
She's
up.
She's a talent wrangler.
Yeah. At the end, when we, okay. Well, my job this year and last year as well, because I'm quite easy to see.
Well, you've got rainbow
with the hair.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. Quite easy to spot. I stand on the end of the, at the edge of the stage, getting people off the stage in the right direction so they can go back and do press. And you sort of have to flail your arms around and get them to see you so they go the right direction. And my dad and I, at the end of the show, we always, you know, we get in the car to go home and we discuss our stories for the day, mm-hmm. who we saw. And the first thing he said to me is, Jesse, I met Julie Haggerty. Oh, my gosh.
We had met once before, but I wanted to say hello again.
Well, hello again.
He was a very happy camper.
I was
he made his
thrilled,
day.
And I saw you through the crowd and I was like, oh, my goodness. And you kept coming my way. So I was like, and then said hello. So I was thrilled. But we met briefly also at our temple. So
yes, this is one of the more unusual meetings. Yeah. People ask us
Jews in Hollywood. That right. never happens.
How do we book guests for our podcast?
Oh, yeah.
People have been known to ask that question.
Yep.
Well, first, there are many ways we get offered people. We were pitched by publicists sometimes. We seek out people. We chance to meet people. And in this case, attending High Holy Day services at our temple.
That's it.
In Beverly Hills.
Yes.
This is in September. I had seen Marriage Story at the Telluride Film Festival on Labor Day weekend, but the general public had not seen it yet.
Right.
And you were a member of our temple via marriage
yes.
to a
yes.
Jewish gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw you and I said, I got to go over and congratulate her. And so no one else was doing that. And if it had been 2 months later, I'm sure a lot of people would have been telling you how much they enjoyed you in that film, Noah Baumbach's terrific film.
Yes.
And but I guess I was the first person to respond to the movie.
I know. I was shocked. I was like, and you said you'd seen the movie. So, and then you were just, it was thrilling to hear that you'd seen it. And I was just, and to meet you and.
Well, and also
I still am gushing.
No, it's so.
And also,
so
you're
sweet.
So good in it.
Thank you. I have to say, I was so excited to work with Noah,
mm-hmm.
and he's right up there with. I think he is a young one of our great American writer directors,
mm-hmm.
and someone said to me it. To watch him direct, it's his playground, and so anyway, I went to meet him. I got the part, and I was so thrilled. And then to work with Scarlett and Merritt Weaver and Adam Driver, and to be directed, and Noah just loves. Adam Sandler said to me, I'd met him briefly, and I had commented that he had been in Noah's other film.
The Meyerowitz stories, yes.
And I had said how wonderful he was. He goes, well, be prepared because you'll do 20 or 30 takes. And I was like, really? And he said, yes. And I said, well, I was so happy to hear that because otherwise as an actor you would have thought, I'm not getting it.
Sure.
And terrified. And instead, he gave me the gift of being able to go, wee, let's do it again. And Noah sets up there are no phones on the set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very quiet and calm. And it's so you get into Noah's world and you rehearse, which is unusual for a film now. We rehearsed like two weeks,
mm-hmm.
our scenes, just those little scenes. And he blocked it out. And so you were just ready to come in and disappear, mm-hmm. in Noah's world. So
wow.
He's just spectacular.
And neat. Scarlett Johansson is awfully good in that movie too, and you have most of your work with her.
Yes, and I have to. She is as kind and brilliant and beautiful, and she would do things like at night, and not tell anybody. Have like a beignet truck come, and or a soup and grilled cheese truck come, and you know she just. To me, just as comfortable as you would never. I mean, she's Scarlett Johansson,
right.
But if you took her outside of that and plopped her in Ohio or, you know, somewhere.
I said this to my dad about her. We met her very briefly when she was getting to do her hand and footprint ceremony at Grauman's with all of the other Avengers.
How neat.
And she could not have been nicer.
Yeah.
And then I got to speak to her at Spirit Awards. She came over to me to talk about my hair and my tattoos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm looking because her team is standing there and I'm trying to show them that I'm not keeping her. You know, I'm trying to like get my hands up going, she's talking to me, guys. I swear I'm not trying to, you know. And she was so sweet.
Yeah.
Like overwhelmingly sweet and lovely. And I said to my dad after the fact, I went, if you didn't know she was Scarlett Johansson, you wouldn't know she was Scarlett Johansson. You just think this is this lovely person. And I think what's been so much fun about seeing her in Jojo Rabbit as well is you get to see this extra, this quirky, I don't know, she's just really special.
She is so special. And the fact that she's just so accessible and just sort of, you know, kind of like, well, she's normal.
She's a person, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess because she's Scarlett Johansson, you expect her to be something else. But I think that that's the beauty of her work is she's just centered and kind and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she's just accessible,
mm-hmm.
you know.
She hasn't let fame turn her inside out, upside down.
Absolutely not.
And your musical number with her and Merritt was delightful.
Oh,
what a sweet, lovely thing. And for anybody, it's actually on YouTube. You can look it up. So if you just want to see the number, look it up. Marriage Story, and it's there.
I was terrified. I don't sing or dance. And Merritt was maybe not as terrified as I was, but close. And so Merritt and I were rehearsing, and she would come over to my house and, you know, and we'd have lime yogurt and, you know, and then one day we rehearsed with Scarlett. She came in and said, oh, in like 5 minutes, boom, and then went back to work. And Merritt and I both like went, you know, just sort of, and then Merritt, meant this in the sweetest way, but only in a funny way. Merritt looked at me and she said, I'm so glad someone, meaning me,
mm-hmm.
is worse than I am. And I just fell on the floor. She's delightful.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Darling, mm-hmm. too. I think she's shy,
mm-hmm.
you know, but just... Oh, I will watch any show if it has her name on it.
Sure.
Go,
oh, sure.
Oh, let's watch this.
Yeah.
Because she's, oh, did you see, what was the one where she plays the sheriff in town?
I don't know.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, rats. Oh, it's so good. It was a couple years ago. She mm-hmm. won an Emmy for it.
Because my mom watched her, and she's a Nurse Jackie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. My mom watched that religiously.
She plays this gunslinging sheriff, and there are only women left in this town. And it's with Jeff Daniels, and he's really evil. And
I'm going to look it up.
Okay. Oh, yes, you can Google it.
Because that is fascinating.
It is so good and so scary. And she's just flinging these guns around and shooting.
Perfect training to perform a Sondheim song.
Right. Exactly. We did have fun with that, though. Mm-hmm. We really did when it was over.
That's Godless. Is that
Godless?
It?
That's Godless. It. Okay. Wow. You guys must watch it.
Well, now I'm intrigued. Yes.
Yes.
How it's only 7 episodes.
And then so you get your beginning,
Jack O'Connell.
End.
Oh, there's really good mm-hmm. people in
oh,
it
yeah.
as well. Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
You'll have to call me after you see it.
Right.
Today's tip.
Yeah, we've just gotten Godless. You can look it up. How cool.
Okay.
Now, another current event, more or less, is that this is the year 2020. I still can't quite adjust to that.
No.
But that means that Airplane is 40 years old. How is that possible?
I don't know. Bob and I are still very good friends.
Robert Hayes.
Robert Hayes.
How dare you? Yes.
No, to you, he's Bob.
He's the nicest guy. Mm-hmm. And so we have stayed friends. Mm-hmm. And 40 years, we just look at each other and go, we were just in San Francisco, and they had like a little, I hadn't seen the movies with an audience since it opened.
Mm-hmm. Oh my, really?
No. And, and I hadn't seen it in years and years. And Bob and I went because it was like a celebration.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And people came dressed like Bob or like Lloyd Bridges with his hair out. And to see that the movies still... people were laughing. And
well, it's so funny.
It's also on TV all the time. It is like a permanent fixture on television. It really
Oh, that's swell.
Well, we always say, because it is, no one knows what's going to happen when they make a film. They don't know if it's going to exist forever or if it's going to mm-hmm. fade away or if maybe it gains a following after the fact. And you certainly don't know if you're going to be in something that's going to become a piece of pop culture
mm-hmm.
where people are ripping it off and referencing it all the time to the point where people don't even know that it started with that film.
Oh, gosh, that's
you
true.
Know?
Yes.
And Leslie Nielsen was such a... he was so famous. So famous. Like, when I was growing up, when I was a kid, he was still one of the biggest names.
Well, that film reinvented his
yeah,
career. And Lloyd Bridges, too.
Yes.
And Robert Stack. These are guys who never even smiled in movies.
Right.
No, they didn't.
Up to that point.
And they were actually kind of making fun of themselves. Like
yes,
Robert,
of course.
Yeah.
With the double glasses.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all, I had the pleasure of meeting them all. They were all very nice guys and had wonderful senses of humor.
Yes.
But not on screen.
Yeah.
No. You know, I mean...
until that moment.
Yeah. Lloyd Bridges, was it Sea Hunt?
Yeah.
You know, and they were always diving and Peter Graves.
Mm-hmm. Another
you know,
one.
He was always, you know, and then to see them in these parts.
Yeah.
And then Leslie Nielsen went on to do nothing but comedy.
Yeah.
After that, he had so much fun making people laugh.
But that's when I was a kid, I was born in the 80s, and when I was a kid, he was, as I say, one of the most famous people.
Uh-huh.
And he was in everything. Whenever they needed that quirky character, he appeared.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Bridges, you know? I interviewed Jeff Bridges several times. He told me he was in a film called Blown Away about a terrorist, and played by Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh,
and
boy.
There was a character for an old sea salt kind of guy. And Jeff said, well, have you thought of my dad? And the producer said, your dad's a comedian.
Oh, isn't that
can
funny?
Can you imagine?
So,
no.
I mean, 40 years of dramatic work instantly evaporated because he had appeared in Airplane.
Oh.
Go figure. Now, so those guys were all veterans.
Yes.
That was your first movie.
Then there's Baby You.
Baby Me. Yes, I was 24. Okay. It was my first film. I was living in New York doing off Broadway. And I screen tested. Howard Koch Sr. was the executive producer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lovely, lovely man. And so we did the old-fashioned screen test. I tested with Bob. And then all those guys, I didn't know about lighting or marks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew in theater, you know, you kind of go by the sofa or whatever.
Sure.
So they were so lovely with me because Leslie would take me and move me slightly instead of say, "You're in my light," you know, and just so generous. So I really, it was on the job training
mm-hmm.
with all of my heroes growing up. And Barbara Billingsley.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, all the TV moms, right?
Yes.
Right.
Just, so they were great. And Bob, Robert Hayes, he was on Angie at the time, mm-hmm. a TV. He was doing his TV show. So he would split the difference. So sometimes he would run from one soundstage to our soundstage, you know, kind of throwing different scripts around. And you could always tell when he was coming because you'd hear laughter, you know, or there was the makeup people and you'd hear them laugh and the wardrobe and you'd hear him. And the laughter would get closer and you'd go, "Oh, Bob's here," you know, just a swell guy.
What lovely memories then.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful memories.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear. Because it's a happy movie.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know that there are happy memories associated with it.
Yes.
Which isn't always the case.
No.
That's true.
Now, but I want to turn the clock back a little bit. Because you've had several careers,
mm-hmm.
and you were from Cincinnati originally, right?
Yes, Cincinnati.
You
Ohio.
Are from Cincinnati, not work.
Yes. Well, I left at 16, so I think it.
But you, who launched you on a modeling career?
I was working. There was a local store, and I was on the teen board, and Eileen Ford was in town and invited me to come and to New York, and I stayed the summer with her and then went back home, and then I wasn't a very good model, so when I wanted to come back, she said I would make more money babysitting.
Oh no.
So I wasn't going to take no for an answer, though, so mm-hmm. I called Wilhelmina, who had another modeling agency, so she said, "Okay, come."
And those are two of the biggest agencies ever.
They were big agencies.
I mean, Ford, starting with Ford is pretty incredible.
Well, yes, but I think Eileen was right in the sense I would have been better off babysitting. But thank goodness at the time I had a lot of hair, so I did a lot of shampoo ads, which paid the rent.
Mm-hmm.
And Eileen, I did get to live at Eileen's house for a summer, which was just stacked with young girls, you know, and you'd stay in the bedroom with her daughter, one of her daughters, or this or that. And, you know, because I was from Ohio, for some reason, I was in charge of the drain on her back porch of her townhouse, making sure that it didn't clog up. I who knows? So
she saw something in you.
Yes, she did.
Something drainy.
Drainy. She's a good drain unplugger.
Now, what prompted, what is the source of your ambition that you left home at 16 to make your way in New York?
Well, I don't know. I just wanted to get out in the world. You know, mm-hmm. I did. My dad was a musician on a local TV show in Cincinnati, and I used to love to go to work with him. And he was in the band, and the show was on for an hour and a half. And I kind of, and my brother Michael was going to Carnegie at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And my brother Kim was a guitarist, So I just decided everybody else laughed. And, you know, they were supportive. And and I think being naive was a good thing. So I didn't see a lot of the things that maybe I would have seen now. But then when my brother finished college, by that time I had, you know, been, I'd lived in Italy and then in Paris. And then
modeling for Wilhelmina?
Well, yes, for a different agency then, but I guess they all. But once again, the hair helped. So, and my brother, I was grateful. My eldest brother finished school. And so we got an apartment together in New York. I had the bedroom and he had the living room, but he started an off Broadway theater company with five of his friends from Carnegie, Norman Renee and Sheldon Epps and Michael and, oh, I can't remember. So I started working in the theater. Well, it was like this little black box and I would clean and take tickets. And then Norman invited me to do my first play there. To enter stage left, you had to come up through the basement and go through an alley and then stand outside and wait for your cue. And like one time it was raining and I was supposed to be coming from upstairs and I was totally drenched in my character's pajamas. And I said I was coming downstairs for a cup of coffee and this little wet rag, you know. But it was fun and wonderful and full of great memories. And
so you're an accidental actor then?
No, I had wanted to be an actress. When I was young, little, but I went to Walter Eyer School of Drama in downtown Cincinnati, and that I took the bus every Saturday. And Mark Alton Brown, who is a writer here, he writes. He has a new TV show on. But so we were in Walter Eyer School of Drama together. And here we re-met in California. And he goes, I knew you when you were 11. And so he wrote that show and created that show, Girlfriends.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so Mark was one of the creators of that.
And then you started studying with William Hickey, wonderful actor.
Oh, he was great. He was just great. And what was so wonderful about him is that there was no wrong or right way to do anything. And he never criticized you. And I just love that. And so that was at HB Studios. The fond memories of him coming in and kind of, he always had a cigarette and, you know, just watching us kids do our thing. But he was so supportive and just, yes, a great, great actor.
And so you got this early experience. And did you think that was going to be your path, pursuing theater full time? And
I'm just going to be really honest. I think that, you know, you live kind of hand to mouth. So you don't, I didn't go to college. So wherever I could get a job was what meant something.
Sure, that's the motivation and that's the day-to-day reality.
Yes.
As we say a little too often, I guess, it isn't history while you're doing it. You didn't know Airplane was making history either, you know.
Oh, no.
And so you were just looking for the next job, the next
looking
opportunity.
Exactly. And the guys, David and Jim, well, we used to call them the boys, Zuckers.
Zucker, and Abraham.
Yes. And I remember I went up in the elevator with them. It was at the old Paramount building where I had auditioned. Was that too much of a segue?
No.
My brain is... No. And we all went up on the elevator together, but I didn't know who they were.
How funny.
And then when I went in, it was them. And you know, it just, who knew? And for me, it was really basically my first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I did two little parts that I was cut out of.
Mm-hmm. Well, that means you're a real actress if you've been cut out of something. Right. Yes. I feel like that's a rite of passage.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, when they called and said I had the part after testing with Bob and everything, I was back in New York doing off Broadway at my brother's theater, and it was just like, oh, I'm going to make a movie. It just, in that first day on a soundstage, and the smell, it was magic. It was just like every 1940s movie.
Right.
You know, just look at this. And there's cameras and people. And
and you're on the Paramount Studio lot, which is such a wonderful lot.
On the lot. And it just, you know.
It doesn't get much more Hollywood than that.
You get those gates.
Oh,
you get the
gates.
Fountain. Everything about it is Hollywood.
Right
there. You know, I can't imagine if you're doing that for the first time. I can't imagine how you even stand upright or attempt to make words come out.
I was so terrified. But I learned my script like a play before I went to California because I was so nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And I still do that. So, and Robert Hayes just put you at ease. And Mr. Koch Sr., Howard Koch Sr., that it was joyful. It was like after the first day, I was having a ball.
Well, I like to think that when someone sees that everything you're doing is in earnest, you know, that you're approaching it saying, I'm a sponge, you know, tell me what to do better.
Yes.
Tell me how to be better at this.
Yes.
You know, you hope that is the reaction, that those people who've done it forever will look at you and say, she wants to learn, and so we're going to help her.
In the kindest way. Mm. I mean, it just...
Hey, kid, move. Yeah, I'm with you.
Exactly.
I'm with you. Though I'm sure you at sometimes must have gotten that because that's how that works. But
yeah.
the occasional just, Julie, dear, just shove over slightly.
Yeah.
But it's an incredible, incredible experience. I can't
An
imagine.
old friend of mine was the producer of that movie, was hired by Howard Koch Sr. to produce the film because he had been working for Roger Corman.
Uh-huh.
And was such an efficient producer, as you have to be working for Roger Corman,
right.
That Koch was impressed, and he hired him to produce the movie. His name is John Davison, an old friend who I met at NYU. And so I have a little bit of inside knowledge, and one of the key pieces of knowledge I have is that Paramount thought that film was unreleasable.
Oh, my gosh.
They were going to shelve the movie.
No kidding.
Yep.
Wow.
And I forget what other movie was coming out that summer that they were banking on. That was going to be their big summer hit. And that one tanked. And the minute, I guess, the trailer for Airplane started playing, which, of course, there was no internet then, it started playing in theaters and getting reactions from audiences. So the day it opened, it took off like a meteor.
Wow.
And there was no stopping.
I never knew that. That's amazing. I know when we shot, we were way over in Culver City, you know, and it's when Culver City just had, I think there were two little sound stages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I believe David Zucker said that in a couple of things you could see, they had no money to go back and like reshoot something.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And so we were doing it in one and two takes, and but it took off. It was pretty neat.
Now, speaking of taking off, you, in rapid succession, were cast in one of Woody Allen's best films, A Midsummer Night's Sex Comedy, and Albert Brooks' Lost in America. So within just a handful of years, you, brand new to Hollywood, are in three of the funniest and really most memorable film comedies of all time.
Well, thank you. Aren't I lucky?
Well, they were lucky to have you too.
Well, thank you. It was amazing. I was from airplane and then went back to New York and then started, you know, back in the theater. But it was amazing to... Woody had invited me to... I remember walking through the park. He lived on the east side. And walking through the park. Well, the day... I don't know if this is boring, but the day I met him, I was on my way to do my taxes. And they said he will not talk a lot and just sort of get in and get out. And so I was sort of, you know, standing there quiet. And he goes... So what are you up to? And I said, I'm on my way to do my taxes. He said, no, well, what are you up to? I said, I'm on my way to do my taxes. You know, I think now he probably wanted to know what I was working on.
But right,
I was bent on getting my taxes done. And so he called my agent as I was going to get my taxes done. And when I finished with that, my agent, I called him and he said he would like to have you come back and read the script in the office, because you weren't allowed to take. And I got to read the whole script.
Oh well, and that's rare too.
That's sometimes huge. Yeah.
He that only lets the actor read his or her part of the script.
So I sat in the office, where his offices were, and he came in and he said, "Well, what do you think?" And I said, oh, what are you going to say? I said, I loved it. He said, okay. And then by the time I got home, on the answering machine, my agent had called and said, you got the part.
Wow.
And then my rehearsal was, I went and Woody, I read my part and Woody read all the other parts. And that was my rehearsal. And he just said, and don't tell anybody. So I was terrified. I went back to Ohio until we shot because I was so excited and I didn't want to blab.
Oh, that's so oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And that was another, oh, my goodness, Jose Farrar, Mary Steenburgen, Woody and... Tony, I mean, it was
Tony Roberts.
Yes,
yeah.
Tony Roberts. It was just,
what was he like as a director for you? Because we've often heard the story of the audition, him being, it's intimidating because he doesn't speak very much.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard a lot of those sorts of stories of, you know, people staring at him going, huh? And just not getting anything, you know.
Yeah.
But I guess, so what was it like on set?
He didn't really say a lot, you know. I think that he might trust what you're doing, and if he wanted something different, he would do something different. I think he was very concerned at the time because we were shooting outside in the country, which he doesn't. At that time, didn't like the country or being outside, so
he was out of his comfort zone.
Yes. Exactly.
Literally
a New
out
York
of his comfort
yeah.
zone.
A city boy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but that was a wonderful. Jose Farrar was, my character was supposed to, was in love with him or had did a Mexican cartwheel or whatever it was called and killed him. But in the meantime, Jose would come and knock on our, we had little campers out in the country, and he'd go, you want to go over lines? And I was just like, I love that. And it's just, and then I'm going, that's Jose Farrar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Acting like you're in love with him is not hard.
Oh, no.
It's not hard.
No, and he would bring books to everyone and all the young stand-ins and people and just a delight, a delightful man.
And then Lost in America, which is just such a jewel of a movie.
Thank you.
And
Albert Brooks is just...
Oh.
That man's a genius. He really is.
I agree 100%. He's a genius, and my only trouble with him is that he needs to make more movies.
I mean,
I mean, agreed. Come on, Albert.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yes, he just needs to make more movies.
Do people stop you, say at supermarkets or at airports or on the street, and say, You don't get the nest egg concept very often.
They do. They do. And they're still angry that I lost the nest egg. And I'm just like, it's a movie. It was 35 years ago. But
and if you don't know what I'm referring to,
watch the movie.
Watch the movie.
Okay.
Even if you do know what I'm referring to, watch the movie again. It's simply great.
He's delightful and brilliant.
You work with such a wide variety of people. I mean, not always at the pinnacle of their success, but Robert Altman. I was a camp follower of Robert Altman in the 70s when he emerged as one of the great talents.
Yes.
And then the fire sort of dimmed a little bit, and his work became more erratic.
Yes,
but I still saw everything he did. Because, you know,
it was Robert Altman.
It was Robert Altman. You know, and so you're in Beyond Therapy from Christopher Durang's play, and with, again, a really good cast.
A wonderful cast. And also, I love Christopher Durang, and I love his writing. He's hilarious. And, yes, Tom Conti, Jeff Goldblum.
Glenda Jackson.
Glenda Jackson. Oh, geez.
And Christopher Guest.
And Christopher Guest. How could I forget?
Talk about people who need to work more.
Oh, Christopher Guest.
I can't. And the idea that he's married to Jamie Lee Curtis, like, I can't handle that much awesome in one household.
I know.
Like, I just can't put that together for myself.
Yeah. I can't either.
You know, like, I want to know if I go sit on their doorstep, would they adopt me? I'll even be a dog. Like, I can sit in a corner. But can you imagine sitting with those two people?
No.
It's just, it blows my mind.
She's amazing.
She's fire.
Yeah.
She's
a firecracker.
That's a lady with some power.
Yeah.
Now,
wow.
So tell us, being on an Altman set and doing a piece that unusual for him is based on a play. He did a couple of adaptations, but this is based on a play. There's a text, you know, there's something there, but he can't just, you know, improvise or let things happen. What was that like for you?
Well, I did the play up in Summerstock.
Oh, good.
So I was that was wonderful for me. So it was a different experience because it was also in Robert or Bob's. When he decided to leave America and live in Paris. And so he had, you know, it was his Paris days. And he's kind of like a big Cheshire cat, you know. He just, like a mad, and his beautiful wife, Catherine, she was a dancer. She is a dancer. But it was like going to the Mad Hatter Tea Party because you would shoot and then drive off in his car and maybe you all were going to dinner. Who knew? You know, and then, but you always had to watch dailies every night. That was a ritual. That, you know, you watched. And he was, you know, he was the master of everybody was mic'd and everybody talked at the same time. And so he did change Christopher Durang's play a lot. The language was still pretty much the same, but he put French people in it. And it was kind of odd, you know, so it became a different kind of feel, but with him, you didn't know if the camera was on your foot or your face, and he didn't want you to know, you know, and that you thought maybe this is, oh, it's my turn to speak, but he's on the people at the other table, and, you know, so it, you know, it just...
Sounds like an adventure.
Being with him and working with him was an adventure. And when I met him to do this part in New York, I was so nervous about meeting him. I went to lunch, and I ordered chicken livers, which...
One becomes overwhelmed. One accidentally buys chicken livers. It could happen.
I know.
It could happen.
To this day, so I sort of pushed them around on my plate. I was like the first thing on the menu. I couldn't, and I was just overwhelmed. So.
Which is fair.
Yes.
And then you're in one of my favorite, I mean, it's not, it's easy to say, but Noise Is Off.
Oh.
That is, when done poorly, still one of the funniest things you've ever seen because it's done poorly.
Exactly.
But when done well.
Peter Bogdanovich directed that film, and I didn't think I didn't think anyone could put that kind of stage farce effectively on film, because it all depends on the immediacy of what's happening right before your eyes in a theater, and you can't believe the timing and the split second, you know,
that closing doors.
Timing of things.
Yes, it just,
but Peter did it.
He did it, and I am so thrilled. Oh, I love Peter.
Mm-hmm.
I just love him. I haven't seen him in so long, but what a filmmaker and what
mm-hmm.
a
So what was rehearsing that like?
Well, you know what,
just a lot of door slamming.
I just
buckets of door slamming.
Buckets of door slamming. But you know, we rehearsed it like a play. So
she did.
We mm-hmm. could have taken it on the road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We could have performed it. So we had I don't know how many weeks we rehearsed, and so we could run it, and then he shot it. So that's how he did that. And that was, once again, Carol Burnett and Michael Caine and mm-hmm. Mark Lynn Baker. And, you know, the cast was just Nicolette Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
It was just this Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, and John Ritter.
Mm-hmm.
It was ridiculous.
As good as good gets.
And John did all of his own pratfalls.
Mm-hmm.
Just falling down those stairs. Mm-hmm. He did it all. And showing up on that set was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of sad, bad, hard things privately that happened during that time for a few of us. And it was really a wonderful place to go
mm-hmm.
and have joy.
Yeah.
So that was, it has a very special place in my heart.
Oh, again, that's nice to hear.
Were you familiar with it when you did it?
Yes, because I had auditioned for the play.
Ah.
And didn't get it. Didn't get it. Didn't get it.
How many years ago was the one that we saw?
Oh, gosh.
It's got to be 20.
I have to figure out.
I think it's 20-ish.
It's a while ago.
Yeah.
And
we saw the revival. We didn't see the original Broadway production.
No.
We saw the revival.
Patti LuPone and Peter Gallagher and all sorts of. It was my first experience laughing so hard I cried in a theater. It really was. Because I think it was when I was 12. I was 12 or 13 when we went. And I remember when we stood up at the end, I hurt.
You hurt.
It hurt.
I know. It just...
Because you were laughing and sitting with my parents. I mean, it was that much better. Theater in general, go to theater, my friends. I know it can be expensive. Find a way.
And go.
And seeing that with both my parents on either side and watching them laugh like I was laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great.
Oh, how wonderful.
And that's why it's wonderful to have the movie, because not everyone can see it. And you need to see it with the right people. Because, again, when it's not done well... You don't understand.
I don't understand.
You don't understand why it's revered the way it's revered.
Yeah.
I have never seen a... that was, I think, the funniest play I've ever seen.
It's, mm-hmm.
It's just delicious.
Yeah, remarkable. Now, you're in another notable play, not on film, but on Broadway, The House of Blue Leaves, John Guare's play.
Yes, yeah.
With Susie Kurtz and John Mahoney, Christine Baranski, Ben Stiller, mm-hmm. another.
We called him Baby Ben then.
Oh.
He probably just hit me over the head if he heard mm-hmm. me say that. He was 16.
Oh, my.
He was a baby.
He was a baby Ben.
That is a baby.
And that was another wonderful time. We were at the Mitzi Newhouse, and then the...
Which is at Lincoln Center.
Yes, I'm sorry. And the big theater had been dark for a few years. And so we reopened it with that play. And then it went to Broadway. And we all, John would come and we'd all go out and eat together across the street. And then John would come and pick off of all of our plates. So we always had to leave something for John. And he'd eat off our plates and talk before the show, you know. And it was just, this was a real family.
Mm-hmm.
This was a real family. And we were together. I left to go do Beyond Therapy and then came back.
Mm-hmm.
But we were together way over a year.
Wow.
It's a long time.
Way over a year. And John, I loved John Mahoney. There was no, that he would laugh and put his hands together. A real Irishman. You know, just dear.
I can't. People know John Mahoney best, I guess, from Frasier,
where he played
the dad. And I got to interview him once, and I asked him how it was that he... You know, we're used to British actors and Australian actors playing American. Mm-hmm. That's pretty commonplace now. But he really was British, and he lost his accent. And he told me it happened when he was in the Army.
Hmm.
Wow.
That he was tired of being ragged on, I think. You know,
for
being the one limey in the group, and so he just worked at it,
and
you'd never know.
You would never ever ever know, never know.
wonderful actor,
and he started in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
but I think he was in his 40s when he started. He was, mm-hmm. you know, and it was just a passion and. Mm-hmm. A real inspiration that mm-hmm. you can start your passion whenever you
go for
it.
Exactly.
So.
Now, and that was recorded for American Playhouse.
Yes.
I don't know if it was on film or videotape. I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
But there's at least a record of
there is
that cast,
yes.
including you,
yes.
doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And then sometime later, you got to do a revival of a play I saw. Well, it's an old play, but it's been done several times on Broadway, Mornings at 7.
Oh.
Wonderful play
yes.
by Paul Osborne.
Yes.
Just, I don't think that'll ever grow old,
that
play.
It's a classic.
It's about a family and a neighborhood and just ordinary folks, all with quirks.
Yes.
All with different kind of quirks.
Yeah.
And for this revival that... Dan Sullivan directed.
Oh, another wonderful.
You were there with, again, you know, Frances Sternhagen, Estelle Parsons. I'm reading this list, so I don't remember Piper Laurie, mm-hmm. so I don't forget. Buck Henry, the late Buck Henry. Christopher Lloyd, Stephen Tobolowsky. I mean,
yes.
that's an ensemble. I haven't even named everybody.
It was another wonderful time.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of these human beings, Franny loved to swim every day. No matter how cold it was. And she always come up from the train with her backpack, you know. And Christopher Lloyd loved his peanut butter cups. And we'd always do the conga. I don't know how that started, but before every show. And Piper was down. Tobo and I, I call Stephen Tobolowsky mm-hmm. Tobo. Tobo and I were upstairs on the tippity top floor, and with the wig gentleman, and we had birthday parties. We had crazy audiences. The play is a classic, which will, you know, be able to have. More be seen over and over and over again. But one time somebody rented out the first two rows and they had on these big headdresses. To this day, it's a mystery. And Stephen Tobolowsky and I still talk about it because Buck said, he came back, he goes, "Don't look at the front row." So of course you go.
It's the very first thing you do.
What are you doing, Buck? And then he'd like to try and upstage you. So downstage you. So you'd have to look at these people with hats on. To this day, I don't know. The first two rows were empty. And the people with the big hats were there.
Hmm.
And to this day, it's still a mystery. So,
there's like some cult, some Broadway cult that just goes out and rents
the first two rows.
They're so ready. Oh, God. That's... I can't imagine. I always think it's really interesting when someone does both film and theater. And now it's so frequent. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
Yes.
I love that it's become a thing where you can do. My dad said it before that it used to be the Brits did this. Mm-hmm. The Brits saw nothing. There's nothing strange to them about you do theater and then you do a film, then you do a TV show. That was normal. Here, it wasn't the case, mm-hmm. you know. And now
you were a movie
more,
actor or a theater or a TV actor.
Yeah.
And that was the line that was seldom crossed. And then, you know, TV actors wanted to graduate to being movie actors. Mm-hmm. And now it's all very fluid.
I think that's wonderful.
And so many young actors, and this started happening when I was a teenager, started going to England to do shows. A lot of Youth in Revolt, there's a handful of those that are like three people shows, and I've completely blanked on absolutely all of it. But it was the sort of thing where they were going over again and again to do shows in London, and I just thought, how wonderful that this is happening. And again, now it's much more common. Mm-hmm. And we see actors and actresses who are in Orange is the New Black, and then they go and they do The Color Purple.
It's wonderful.
And it's like, I love, because again, it also brings people to the theater.
Yes, it's so important.
Rent was one of the first to do that in a big way. Rent was one of the first shows that was cast pop stars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you could see almost anybody in that show. And again, all I care about is get into the theater.
Yes.
So if you cast Nick Lachey, go for it. You know, do whatever you need to do to get them in there.
Right.
Forgive me for anyone else who knows who that is. It was actually Drew Lachey. Don't judge me. It was Drew.
I didn't judge. Did you?
No.
Okay.
No,
okay.
Not even tempted.
No.
No, but you've remained loyal to your theater roots.
Yes.
And I find that admirable. That during this, you did a lot of episodic television and, mm-hmm. and movies galore, but you seem to have maintained your the one foot is firmly in that theater world.
I've always, you know, when young people say, what should I do? And I always say, go to New York and do theater.
Mm-hmm.
Start in theater, do theater. It's the best training. Because you could go from the
beginning. It gives you everything.
And you have that response of an audience, and they're mm-hmm. with you. And it becomes this, you know, you come off sad sometimes because you go, what happened? You know, they didn't laugh. Yeah,
that didn't land.
Then
this
didn't after, you know, and then you just go, but that was their experience.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing more exciting than it. It really is like a wild mouse ride.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, when we did the House of Blue Leaves, we were closing and my hands would turn blue. And the stage manager said, Julie, we're closing tonight. Your hands don't have to be blue with fear. And I said, yes, they are. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like that, here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go. Why am I doing this? I don't know. Maybe I should go home. And then you're on the stage. And then it's like a wild mouse ride. Mm. You know, the whole world disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's intermission.
Right.
You got to start again.
But that's, it's alive.
It's alive.
I can't imagine what it must be like to go from one to the other. Have you never done it? So if you've never done theater and do it for the first time and you get a reaction, I can't imagine what that must feel like. And at the same time, if you're a theater actor who goes to a sound stage where it's dead quiet,
mm-hmm.
you know, that because it's so different.
It is so different. But when I did Airplane, because of the Off-Off Broadway theater company, my stomach is making noises. Forgive me. There was more crew than there was an audience.
Hmm. Right.
So I was sort of like, oh, no, this is scary. But it is a different feeling, you know, in movies, it's chopped up and it's, but you still have to have that same heart. It's just,
oh, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love them both. Mm-hmm. I still like, oh my gosh, I'm from Ohio and I got to be in a movie, you know, and I'm from,
again,
this,
it's wonderful that you still feel that way.
Oh,
it's
I
just
do.
Great.
Well, and of course, and this we know, and as you say with Airplane, they last forever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's the best and worst thing about a show, about being on stage, yeah. is that when it is over,
it's gone.
It's over. And part of that is very special because it means that it only existed in that moment. As you say, you know, with every audience, that show only happens for them that one time.
Exactly.
It's there. But it's also lovely to be able to look back and go, oh my, and here I am at 24 years old mm-hmm. in this film. And Leslie has just politely shoved me to the side so that I'm in the right place. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's just magical.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of theater, I have to get this in there. There's so many credits that we go through one by one, but... You did The Master Builder
yes.
with two of the pillars yes. of New York theater, Andre yes. Gregory and Wallace Shawn.
And
directed by Jonathan Demme.
Yes. That was just a whole nother experience. I mean, I have to say we worked on it for 17 years. Mm. That's how Andre does it. And then we did the play in this little townhouse where you had only, if there were more than 12 people, Andre... You know, I learned so much from Andre in those 17 years about working. And, you know, he is just, he's a magical man. And Wally, I think I've worked more with Wally. I did a couple movies with Wally mm-hmm. and a couple of plays with Wally. I'm babbling. Jonathan Demme came to see our production of The Master Builder, which is another, you know, you can, the classics that it doesn't, they go forever. You think how old The Master Builder is, and it still is prevalent today. But we were in this little house with maybe 12 people, and Jonathan saw it and said, I would like to do the film. And so we shot that movie in 8 days.
Hmm.
And the crew, Declan was a cinematographer. He came in and they would do 40-minute takes because it was the...
crank?
Digital.
Digital, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the crew was like... And it was like a ballet because we had four cameras.
Oh, my.
And
Jonathan shot a number of concert films, so I guess he had experience doing that.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. he just, so we learned, it was like you forget they're there, but it's like a dance.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're moving this way, then all the cameras move behind you or mm-hmm. go over. So we blocked everything so the cameras would know where to go in the scene. And... It was very exciting, and he was another spectacular gentleman, Jonathan. And
yeah.
Jonathan and Andre work side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Wally's, not translation, but...
adaptation.
Adaptation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And,
of Ibsen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Wally is just one of the lights of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, he just...
He's such a remarkable guy. People watch him now on Young Sheldon
mm-hmm.
on TV, and he's wonderful, as he always is.
Yeah.
Or they listen to him in Toy Story movies.
How does most of my generation know him originally?
Not from Toy Story?
Do you remember what it is?
No.
Clueless.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, again, I'm
no
33.
Kidding.
Most people around my age, the first time we saw him was in Clueless.
I'll be a son of a gun.
And that's... I am fascinated by careers because this mm-hmm. is exactly it. Like you say, he is a pillar in, mm-hmm. you know, the theater in New York. Mm-hmm. And there are kids who will only know him. Yes, Toy Story.
Right.
But for me, the first thing I do picture is him in Clueless with Amy Heckerling.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back and watch that.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, as movies go, that one only gets better with age.
Okay.
And the jokes, it's one of the films that, because of how old I was when I saw it, it's a film that, as I've gotten older, all the jokes make sense. So it was funny to me then, yes. But now suddenly I understand. I know what they were trying to say.
Yes.
Still one of the greatest things. You know, do you like do you like Billie Holiday? I love him. Just small ones like that just are much funnier as you get older.
We'll go back and watch that tonight. We'll see if we can get it on the...
Do you enjoy doing Family Guy?
Yes.
You're so much fun on that show.
I get all excited when they call me in for my little part.
And, you got to marry Adam West.
I know. I wish I
had Mayor
gotten to
Adam
meet
West.
I know.
Was it one of those? Did you never meet him? Did you never record with him? This is the craziness of doing voices.
Yes.
You know?
Never met him. I was like thrilled. I mean, I was just like, oh my gosh. And I just think that show is genius.
It is.
It's just genius.
It is. We were chatting a little before we started recording, and my favorite thing is that they don't care. Seth MacFarlane doesn't care if everyone gets the joke. He's going to make it. It doesn't matter if it's... I mean, and there's so much I will record and show my dad. I'll say, can you believe they just made this joke?
I loved when he did the Academy Awards. When he
was wonderful.
I thought he was fabulous.
Well, he's also a real performer. He's got a great voice.
Yeah.
My dad's a jazz nut. And he tours with the best. I mean, the people he plays with are some of the best out there.
He only works with the finest musicians.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
he's just I did a show for I got fired from it. But and he was one of the producers, and they promised me I wouldn't get fired because I said I get fired from TV all the time, and they said you won't get fired. So I don't do well on TV.
No,
but it's just a dance you do, and I need rehearsal, and so Seth said when that happened, he goes, I'm going to put you on Family Guy. And I was like, oh, sure. And there's a man on the moon and he eats cream cheese. And, but I thought it was very sweet for him to say that. Well, gosh, about 2 years went by and I got a call. And I went, he's a man of his word. I was just knocked out by that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Big talent.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy working on Black Monday, speaking of a current, recent project?
Yes, I did. Don Cheadle and Regina Hall and...
Andrew Rannells.
Oh, golly.
Talk about theater.
Broadway.
This guy's got a voice, a killer voice.
I know, and delightful.
Yeah. And you know that he... Part of how he sort of moved from stage to screen was through Lena Dunham and Girls.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's one of the places that people started to see him that wasn't just stage, because he was the lead in Book of Mormon, and that's how he got
famous.
But then he's on this show playing a completely different character.
Oh, he is deliciously nutty.
Mm-hmm.
They're all nutty.
It's a wild show.
It's a wild ride.
And Paul Scheer, who is fantastic in the show, I got to tell him this, getting to see him act, getting to see more of his range, and people sort of becoming aware that he's not just funny. Mm-hmm. He can really do everything.
He can.
That's really exciting, too.
It's and people should watch that show. It's really fun.
It's coming back. I don't remember if it's this month or next, but all the promos have started again.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they've got Don Cheadle in this long-haired wig, can't wait. I cannot wait to see what
they
do.
I hope they bring you back.
Yes.
Well,
keep
my fingers crossed. And he is a delightful man.
Mm-hmm.
He is delightful.
Don Cheadle.
Yes.
He's another one. He's got that career. He's got that it.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, what was the, where he played didn't he win an Academy Award
was it Hotel Rwanda?
Yes.
Did he win that year? I don't remember. We can look it up. I think he was nominated. No, he's fantastic. That's another one. The range on that
anything.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
He
can
anything.
Be funny as hell in Avengers.
Yes.
You know? And he has that timing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can do that. And then he can be in another show that's complete. I mean, because this is his second TV show.
Third.
In recent.
Oh,
no,
wow.
But recently speaking.
Okay. Oh, wow.
You know, he was in that House of Lies.
Right.
which again had a fantastic cast, and then moved into this. Yeah.
Julie, what a pleasure to sit here and talk with you and go over all of these highlights. And you have so many.
So many.
Oh,
and all over the
in
place.
In a career that is far from done.
Thank you.
And, well, I mean, you know, it's not everybody who can sit here and say that they're in a beloved string of comedy films starting 40 years ago and a celebrated film from this past Oscar year. And
Netflix, you're part of the Netflix family.
Yeah. Oh, I like Netflix. I do indeed. And, but I just want to say this has been a great joy and an honor for me to be here.
Oh, well.
Really, from my heart.
You're so kind.
So neat. But I'm going to steal your shoes.
I will bedazzle anything that you want. This
okay.
is not a problem.
I'm on my way to get a pair of sneakers.
I'm in it. I will, anything you want me to. That'll be, you know, that could be it. You and I will have a Netflix show where we just go and stalk people and bedazzle them.
And bedazzle their
That'll
shoes.
Be our new thing.
Okay.
You know, you never know. Everybody needs bedazzlement.
Yes.
You know?
Indeed.
That's...
Are you a social media person?
Not at all.
Not at all.
No. It's safer that way.
I have a hard time working my phone anyway, so I just discovered
okay.
some things that
now,
I didn't know.
Do you have kids?
I have two stepchildren.
Okay.
And then we just adopted my nephew, who's a grown man.
Oh, mm-hmm. Mazel tov.
Thank you. And so I have a granddaughter.
Kids, so you know, you have them for the purpose of learning technology and making them fix things.
All right.
Well, I have been informed of this over the years.
All right.
Because when I'm not home, magically the TVs, the phones, the internet all break.
Yes.
And yet when I am there, they function. So this is, you know, you got a granddaughter. Doesn't matter how young she is. I guarantee she can work a phone. It's terrifying.
Okay.
It's terrifying how early
well,
they can work a phone.
Just come over to my house?
I mean, if you want me to, I can do that.
I'm stealing your daughter.
Okay.
He's over it. He's had me a long time.
Advance notice is fine.
That's.
Thank you again for being here.
Thank you with all my heart.
And if you just can't wait to see or hear from us till next episode, where can people find us?
You are at Leonard Maltin, and I'm at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram. And you can go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews, book roundups, and all kinds of good stuff.
And we are on Patreon.
The Maltrion family.
Yes, Patreon. That's patreon.com/Maltin on movies. All those words strung together. And if you like what we're doing and want to support it, keep it going, we thank you. And we'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for listening. Today's episode of Maltin on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.